Hello and welcome to a brand new kind of Arsenal podcast brought to you proudly by the Gooners podcast in conjunction with the Highbury squad. It's a respite from the wins and losses, a break from tactics and talking points, just good old fashioned fun chats and banter with some of the most recognizable and beloved faces within our great Arsenal family, telling their stories, sharing their views, and answering your questions. Join us now live as we travel from Highbury to the Grove. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the second episode of From Highbury to the Grove. If you joined us a couple weeks ago for our duck breaking episode, thank you. I hope you enjoyed it. What a way to kick off this new podcast by having an absolute legend like Amy Lawrence, who I'm lucky enough to consider to be a friend and frankly a neighbor, joining me live from the North Bank of Highbury, a place that has so much meaning to Amy and to me and to millions of others who call themselves Arsenal supporters. And it's just an absolute treat, and I hope that the conversation in the Q&A was entertaining for everyone. We really ended up barely having time to scratch the surface on some topics like 1989 and others, so we hope to have Amy back on another episode on another day. But tonight, we move forward with another fantastic individual in the amazing Arsenal community. Tonight, we're joined by a man who many consider to be the go-to for sensible and level-headed reactions to what we're seeing our club do on the pitch and off of it. He's a man whose silky voice graced the Supporting Supporters advertising campaign, highlighting local businesses and their relationship to the Arsenal. He's coached football at the youth and non-league levels, and in late 2019 was the surprise second choice to Mikel Arteta to replace Unai Emery as Arsenal head coach. Most people don't know that. He's coached as part of his promotional tour for this podcast appearance. He appeared just this morning on some small little show called Sky Sports The Overlap, I think is what it's called, with some guys, Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher, talking England football, talking Ben White Gate. So far been watched by over 210,000 people in just 8 hours. So good publicity for the podcast. Thank you for doing that. And of course, you can hear and see him all of the time on the amazing Arsenal Vision podcast, where his acute and astute feedback, tactical noose, and emotional intelligence shines through and causes tens of millions of people every episode to tune in. So it's my great pleasure to welcome to From Highbury to the Grove tonight, the one, the only, Clive Palmer. Welcome to the pod, Clive.
Hello. How are you, young man? You well?
I'm doing okay. I'm not young, but I will take that. And I certainly appreciate you joining us on your busy week. Back and forth up to Manchester yesterday, was it?
Yeah, Manchester yesterday. I did a podcast earlier on today. Big game, right? It's weekend.
Yeah,
so heads on.
A little bit, and we might talk about it a little bit, but I really mean a little bit, because, like I said, this podcast is more about this guy and getting to know you and having people in the Ooh. Chat be able to ask you questions than it is about Manchester City. Trust me, there's enough podcasts if you want to listen to great content about the game this weekend and get yourself completely nervous. Now, I did misspeak a little bit because I said you were the one and only Clive Palmer, but apparently you need to explain this There's apparently another Clive Palmer out there, a billionaire Clive Palmer, another billionaire Clive Palmer out there.
Yeah, I've been sent stuff about him before, and obviously we're twins separated at birth, but our financial situation is very similar. And so, yeah, but he's quite famous, isn't he, out here in Australia? So,
I think so. Yeah. And he's, you know, he's made his fortune basically just posing as you and reaping the rewards of that. So, want to say hello to everyone in the chat so far. We've got about 150 people in the chat. Chief Like Officer Tammy Steeles is here, reminding you to hit the like button and subscribe to both the Gooners Podcast and Highbury Squad if you haven't already. We do have some pressure on us today because we have a comment from somebody. Where is it? Oh, yes, from Matt Tomo, saying he's got extremely high hopes for this episode. So, you know, normally I like to set expectations low and then exceed them, but when I've got guests like Amy and like yourself, I can't really afford to do that. So thanks everybody for tuning in. First, the elephant in the room.
What's that mean?
What are the favorite word? What are your favorite words that people have used to describe your voice? And do you get sick of it? We talked a little bit beforehand about, you know, but I mean, it's just always about your voice, to the point where I think people are being a little unfair because it's more about what you say than how you say it, in my opinion.
Yeah, being calm is one thing. I'm a calm person. Well, you know me in the real world, Mike. So what you see here is what you get, right? So, and as it comes to voice, I know the sort of feedback I get is something ASMR. I get that, and I get you should read books to send kids to sleep, that type of thing. And
that's I mean, I know they mean well, but you know, the sleeping part, although this is somebody who the first time I had you on my podcast, I was 18 hours into a 27 hour podcast and I actually struggled a little because it was so calm. Sophie came on and absolutely saved my rear end. But I mean, normally if you weren't like up for 24 straight hours, I think you should be able to stay awake.
Yeah, you should be able to. So yeah, it's just who you are, isn't it? You can't, like I say, you can't hear yourself, but people seem to like it, shall I say? Yeah. But if you want someone with a little bit more sort of energy and free world, right? If you want a bit more energy, and then go for it,
Elliot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And hence, funny enough, that's quite a good balance, isn't it? Me and Elliot is the balance. So
the two of you together are perfect. That's why it works so well. So, you know, and you do a lot of podcasts. I think it's safe to say that most of them are focused on you know, the present, the kind of what's going on, the last game, the next game. And we'll touch about that a little bit. But as I was mentioning, this series is really more of kind of one to go a little bit deeper into your personality and your history. Mostly we want to create a bridge between some pretty amazing people and some other pretty amazing people in our chat who may not have the good fortune that I've had to be able to meet you, to chat with you, to really kind of have a conversation as I've been lucky enough to have with you. So starting now and throughout the show, if you're in the chat and you have any questions, which are questions for the guest, that you'd like to see answered, please go ahead and put them in the chat starting now. Start the question off with a G, and we'll save those and ask them, you know, during the last 15 minutes or so of the show. Don't do it for me. Don't hit the like button for me. Do it for Clive. So starting at the beginning, tell us a little bit about your background in football. I mean, did you play as a kid? What age did you play until? And are you still
playing? Yeah, I mean, I've always played when I was a youngster. Always played. Firstly, schooled, and I joined a Sunday team that was quite a good one. A number of players that went pro. So I grew up in the Luton area, and which is just north of London, about 30 miles north of London. And so we had three or four players there that went pro. One was Mitchell Thomas, for example. He went to Spurs and West Ham, and I think he had a cap for England. And so that was my introduction. Sort of played brief county level, but I wasn't like a great player or anything like that. You know, played my better days when I was really young. And then I just played, I started to watch Arsenal a lot more. So playing for a good Saturday team was tough if you wanted to go up to Coventry and Leicester to watch Arsenal. In those days, you could literally just say, I fancy going to Leicester today, jump in the car, and off you went. Whereas now it's a military operation to get a ticket and get to a game. So, and everything was terraces, so you could just stand in there and just get mullered and then come back, right? So that was my introduction. And so then I went into the end of my career, played Sunday and Saturdays at a lower level, because football, watching football is everything to me. And then just naturally went into assistant management. I wouldn't call it coaching at that stage, just assistant management and just helping people and helping teams. So what happened
with Barton Rovers? Because I believe you were briefly the head coach of that team as COVID was setting in. So tell us about that and how that came to be.
Okay, so Barton Rovers. So I live in a place called Barton Le Clay, which is in Bedfordshire, and Barton Rovers is a local village team. And basically, when my son came out of academy at 14, he went straight into one of the multitude of Barton youth teams. And so I wasn't even helping really. Then I ended up helping. And then 14s, 15s, 16s, 17s, they got to 18s, and then I was sort of helping and assisting. And then got to 18s and the manager left. And so I took over the 18s and put a friend of mine in with me who's an ex-Man United player and full professional player and a good coach. And we won a lot of stuff with the 18s. And it went really, really well. Fantastic year. And then the natural progression was to go to the first team. But the first team already had a manager. And he's a really good one. So, and so we supported him. And then eventually, I just stayed and helped support him. My son played. Then when he sort of went on to other things, I sort of came out as well. So I was never the head coach of the men's team. It was more a coach, and I like to call myself as an individual player coach. So I'm much more interested in one-on-ones and really helping people, developing people, seeing things in their games, developing them sort of mentally as well to approach football and how to improve themselves. So that's how I see myself. It's probably no surprise to you, Mike, knowing what I'm like, right? So whereas the big coaching sessions, like 25 lads, and you got everything laid up in different stations, I can do it, but I don't like it. I much prefer either coaching individuals or coaching coaches. That's my big thing. That's what I try and do now, help and support other coaches.
Well, and you're absolutely right. That does show through in your personality when you get to know you, because I think what you draw great pleasure out of is being able to see improvement in a person, not necessarily. I mean, Mikel Arteta's process is so global and so massive, and what he's done with the squad, the back office, all of that over the course of 4 years. But it can be so much more rewarding, I think, to be able to just be one-on-one and see that person respond to it. My dad, rest in peace, he became a podiatrist because it was one of the few medical fields you could go into where the person, as they say, limped into the office and hopped out of the office. Like, you could see that improvement right away. So I would imagine that's why the kind of one-on-one is more attractive to you than
I had some of my sort of ex-players come to the live show we did in London, and I thought that was really rewarding for us, because it's sort of like my two lives sort of clashing. And they thought enough of me to come up to London with 1,000 people to sit there in an audience when they know me in a dressing room. I found that really nice, really. And that just shows me that there's nothing greater for me than having a young person who's just making their way in the world appreciate the support you try to give them. That is it for me. That is it.
Yeah. There's nothing better in the world. And you accumulate those things and you live off of them, and it's fuel. Now, Arsenal wasn't necessarily your first and only club from day one. As I understand, you were kind of split between a couple of clubs based on where you grew up. But ultimately, there was maybe one or two things that tipped the scales for you towards Arsenal. So can you kind of walk us through your early fandom and how you became Arsenal through and through?
Yeah, so it started for me sort of in the early 70s, and it's literally FA Cup final stuff. Oh, who do you fancy to win, Arsenal or Liverpool? And I just said Arsenal. I didn't know where they were. I was very young, and they won, so he stayed with them, right? So I didn't start going to games until sort of the late 70s. And I grew up in Luton, and obviously, not obviously, but I knew a number of the players. They were sort of similar age to me, you know, and players like Ricky Hill, Brian Steen, Mick Harford, Mitchell Thomas, Paul Walsh. I got to know Paul Elliott. I got to know a few of the Luton players. So it was quite natural to sort of watch Luton and then just be interested and support Arsenal. So Arsenal was number one, but you're a young kid. Logistically, you can't get to games, you know? You can't just jump on a train and things like that. And so, but then things changed, actually. And so at that time, the whole environment of watching football for a black man was quite challenging. There was a lot of National Front around at that time. And it was difficult sometimes. You go to grounds and if you go to a ground that's quite aggressive, you can hide your shirt, you can hide your scarf and come out, you can zip your jacket up. But when you go to football matches and you're a black person and it's quite aggressive, you can't hide your head, right? And so that's the challenge. And funny enough, that drew me closer to Arsenal because, as we all know, North London is a quite a diverse area. And when Arsenal came down to Luton, I saw the fans for the first time with my own eyes as a young man, you know, impressionable 14-year-old or whatever the age was. I thought, you know what? I need to start going to those games because that's where I think I belong. And I went up to London on my own and just started to go. None of my friends were Arsenal fans. I just started to go. And as soon as I went up there, I thought, I'm sure this rings true for many people. When you go to Arsenal and you find your place in the world, that's it. You can't explain it. You think, this is where I belong, you know? And that was it for me. And that's why I stopped playing football so much. And I started to go more regularly. And so that's how it started. I also liked Man City when I was young. You know, there was a player called Colin Bell. I loved that player. And I told my dad, I want to go and see him play. He must have looked at me and said, mate, that bloke, Charlie George, is a bit easier to go. It's easier to get to London, easier to get to Manchester. And that's how he sort of encouraged me to go to London. So that's how it all started for me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, my experience, obviously very, very different. But, you know, I had the kind of clueless American element of it as a 15-year-old and walking over and just wanting to be a part of something English and felt this was the way to do it. And, you know, I didn't realize it at the time, but it does grab you and make you feel that you're at home. I mean, it was the first football match I went to was at Highbury, thank God. And I just fell in love with it. And it wasn't until much, much later in my life that I realized why I fell in love with it and what it was about it. And that even 30 years later, this club is still that special club that just, you know, for the most part, and despite what people might think because of the ability for the worst people to shout the loudest now, it is a club that is as inclusive and family as everything else. Do you still think that Arsenal of today, even in this world where things are almost starting to head, not almost, but starting to maybe head in the wrong direction globally, is this still the Arsenal football club that we've always known and loved?
Oh my goodness. Never more so than today. Never more so than today. Because, you know, all my early stories, all I wanted to be like was the guys who lived in Camden, the guys that lived in North London. I just wanted to be like them. I wanted to wear their clothes. I wanted to go to the same nightclubs. I just knew that's what I wanted to be. You know, I wanted to be an Arsenal fan. And that meant going up north. That meant going abroad. Whatever it meant, that was my identity. You know, like I only touched on the black side of things and the diversity side of things, but I can't tell you how important that was for me at that time because in every other walk of life, you were seen as an outsider. It was tough to get a job. It was tough to get educated. It was even tough to get in your car without being stopped and searched. And so basically, when you went to Arsenal, you were just an Arsenal man. You weren't a black man, you weren't a white man, you were Arsenal. And nobody cared at that time. Nobody cared. I've wrote a chapter in a book that's coming out soon, and it is called Black Arsenal. And it will be coming out, and the whole experience of the early days will be in there. So I've done about 5,000 words, so look out for that. And so, but everyone's got their story, hasn't they? Everyone's got their story. But what's changed in the last 2-3 years, Mike, is people like you. I would never have met you 30 years ago, 40 years ago. We'd never know.
And you're glad about that?
Well,
And how many other... you're glad about having met me? I didn't really.
Yeah, but how many people do you know from the UK now that you'd never would have met? You know, the whole globalization of Arsenal support has just gone through the roof. You know, and
the answer is everyone I know in the UK I wouldn't have met if not for this football club. Literally everyone I went to school with back then was American or international students, and I lost track of almost all of them. The only people I know, and it's in the hundreds, are through Arsenal, through podcasting, through Arsenal. I mean, and it's a blessing, to the point where I've started spending quite a bit more time over there, if you know.
I have noticed. And yeah, I've actually said, you know, I've managed to see most of the big trophies, all European finals, and but I've said to people, and I'll say it again, my favorite season was last season. And it's not just the football, it's the people that you share it with. And who that whole excitement of seeing Arsenal come back again and seeing the club be united again, that means we're back. Whereas the previous of not say half decade, but the end of the Wenger years, we were defined by division. We were defined by who we liked and who we didn't like, and who we wanted out and who we wanted in. And that, to me, isn't a club. You know, that's a club going through drift. That's a club going through turmoil. What we have today is so much better.
Okay.
And because it's unique, it's new. Because of the online world, because of the way we absorb sport, because of the information we now have, we can all bring that in because of all the different outlets that we can absorb and share that experience with. It's never been greater than it has been today, in my opinion.
I can already tell that we're going to end up pushing an hour on this show. My goal is 45 minutes, but I don't want to be turning away from a wonderful conversation. So I was reading in, there's a gentleman called Arsenal Addict online who is a wonderful guy. I've met him. I've done his 7 questions blog. You've done it. So many amazing people, not just people like me, but amazing people have done it. So I highly recommend you go to arsenaladdict.com and look that up. But, you know, one thing I saw in there was about your biggest disappointment as an adult following Arsenal. And it's not the 2006 Champions League final. It was a couple years earlier in 2004, right?
Was it the Wayne Bridge goal?
Yeah.
So for anybody who was around at that time, that's the easiest answer ever. It was literally the moment of grief. I think because we all know we had the best team in our history, and we should have won the Champions League. In a strange way, we stayed in the FA Cup too long. I think Jose Reyes scored a couple of goals against Chelsea in the FA Cup, which kept us in the tournament. We then didn't quite rotate correctly, played Manchester United in the FA Cup semi-final, didn't quite rotate correctly, got done in the semi-final. And it was just an awful period. And then on that midweek night, we had Chelsea at home. We drew 1-1 in the first leg. We should have beaten them more handily, but we thought 1-1 in those days with the away goal, we felt pretty comfortable. But we ran out of legs and we lost that game to a Wayne Bridge goal. I think it's Claudio Ranieri was a manager. And it was the lowest moment, not because of what could have happened. I think it's Monaco in the semi-final. It would have been Porto in the final. History may have been different. No Jose Mourinho. Who knows what could have happened?
I was waiting until you were done to point out that that's the worst part of it. Not that we didn't win the double, but that we probably wouldn't even know who Jose Mourinho is if that hadn't happened.
And I always felt that team underachieved because of that. We should have won the league in 2003. We should have won it 3 times on a trot. And we should have won the Champions League in 2004. And that's the truth. It underachieved. They were too good. If you name your favorite ever 5 Arsenal players, 3 of them would come out of that team. So how's that team not got to the Champions League final or won it? Eventually, they did a couple of years later. But for me, that was the moment, and we didn't quite happen.
Man, Clive, you're always so toxic, though. But I mean, just come on. No, I'm just kidding. So your favorite, now let's flip that over. Your favorite Arsenal experience, on the other hand, was a European Cup final nearly 30 years ago. In fact, 30 years ago this year. And, you know, what I liked about your comments about that was that, you know, you made it clear it wasn't just about the game itself, the win, the trophy, but about the whole experience of that game and what it meant to you. So tell us a little bit about the Cup Winners' Cup in 1994.
Yeah, Copenhagen, I mean, it was literally a two-day trip that we had. Nice hotel. Well, we thought it was a nice hotel. Probably wasn't. and yeah, it's in my sort of young lad days, you know, literally get on the plane with 24 cans of Stella tucked away nicely and off you went. And so yeah, very enjoyable trip. Get to the game, day of the game, going to the square in Copenhagen, and it's just like 5,000 Arsenal fans there. I mean, that's it. You're off. And then so like 7 hours later, you stumble across the park outside the stadium. And you go inside, and you go inside the stadium, and literally three sides of the ground are just red and white. And you just think, this is it. You get a feeling about a game sometimes before the kickoff. And there was no doubt in my mind we were winning, even though Parma were a huge favourite. So, yeah, it was just a special day when everyone seemed to be out there. You know, it was almost like the birth of a team. You know, honestly, I can't describe it to you. It was just incredible, the whole day, the whole night. Then nightclubbing later, and I actually met Thomas Brolin, who used to play for Parma. Met him in a nightclub afterwards, and we spoke about the game and everything. It was just fantastic, you know. So just a really good occasion, the whole thing.
I love how you phrase it as though, like, you know, you couch it as something you would do in your younger days. I mean, I'm 51, and this sounds like my trip to Seville earlier this year. like it's just... I don't know that you could ever get too old for that, but maybe not the 24 Stellas, but yeah, the experience is amazing. And I always tell people, you know, on a game day or especially things like the summer tour when they come to the US, or, you know, even when it's not Arsenal in town, when it's, you know, a gathering of Gooners like we have at Gooner Graw every year, or Gooner Palooza, which is coming up in a few weeks, you know, it's usually centered around a football match. But the football match itself is oftentimes the least enjoyable or, you know, least fun part. Oh, absolutely. Because there's stress involved, and there's, you know, sometimes there's not getting a result. It's everything before and after. And that's why, you know, I smiled when I was reading about your Parma experience or your Copenhagen experience, because, you know, yes, we won a European trophy, which is still the last European trophy that we won. But you know, it was to you seemingly much more about the community, the befores and the afters. If I had to choose something that people would remember me by when it comes to Arsenal, it would be just preaching to people to enjoy the journey, enjoy the days, you know, get there early, leave late, and just enjoy it, and, you know, suffer through the game, but enjoy the rest of it.
Exactly. I mean, me and Elliot went to Porto recently, and everything was fantastic about the two-day trip, apart from the football match. I mean, literally, the football match was awful. We lost the last minute, but the trip was just amazing. So that hasn't changed. It hasn't changed much.
Yeah, I've heard amazing things about that trip, and, you know, people just say, oh, yeah, except for the game. But you don't go just for the game. I hope not. So we've got 515 people in the chat live now. Remember, please give a thumbs up if you're liking what you're watching throughout the show. If you're in the chat and you have any questions, we've got a few so far. We'd love to have a few more for our guest. Please put them in the chat, starting with a G. We'll save them and we'll ask them at the end. Of course, those questions are brought to you by the wonderful people at Zenith Coins. Make sure to check out the scroll below. We have more details on how you can get a discount, compliments of Highbury Squad, on the new Zenith coin. So speaking of the experience of being a Gooner, one of the things that I know you and I share, and of course we share this also with so many other generational supporters of our football club, is the family element of this passion of ours. Mothers and fathers with their sons and daughters, sometimes even grandparents and that sort of thing. It's probably the greatest thing that I love about the football culture and Arsenal in general. And of course, I've had the wonderful pleasure, as have a few people in the chat mentioned already, of meeting your son. I know you've got other family as well. Your son is a similar age to mine, to my Jake. And tell us what it's like to have children who are sharing your passion with you, who are old enough, you know, and now even kind of grown, so that you're not necessarily even taking them as your kid, but as a friend and as a fellow supporter.
Yeah, he's like me, right? You be careful what you wish for. You hope they like football. Then he's always played, and he's a better player than I was. And I'd like him to play more, but it's very difficult for me to say to him, you should play more football, when also going through a special period at the moment. Because if it was me, I'd tell my dad to do one. I'm going to the games. And so I don't put him under pressure to play. But obviously going to games, he's very much like me. He has got things to say. If he ever gets on a podcast, I think everyone will be in trouble. He's got things to say.
It's a matter of time. It's got to be. I mean, I'm sure Elliot's already got the rights to him. But
he knows his football, and he's more direct than me. I can go around the houses a little bit and bring you in sort of emotionally, but he just cuts straight to it, and he's like, "Crikey, mate, chill." So, but yeah, it's good fun, right? It's nice. It's nice that you. There was a period. I mean, I can tell you now. Sat with him when we went 2-0 down to Hull at Wembley Stadium, he wasn't like saying to me, "Thanks very much, Dad." Do you know what I mean? For introducing me to Arsenal Football Club, I'll tell you that for nothing.
Yeah,
he was a lot younger then, and it's quite an emotional period. But of course, it ends up in a good place, right? So,
and then to be able to share that with him, I mean, the worst part about that specific game is that I had really been watching everything with my son, and then I had traveled out, so I ended up watching it with a great supporters group out in San Francisco, the Bay Area Gooners. But
yeah,
and I was with my wife on that day, and it was celebratory and wonderful. But just not being able to see it with my son was awful. But then I only had to wait a year. To right that wrong, and we've had so many, the FA Cup victories and individual games and late winners that, but it is fantastic. And you know, my daughter went to games when she was in London for university. She lives on her own in Tennessee now, and completely having nothing to do with me anymore, she goes and watches the games at the supporters club. She texts me about it. I looked at Amazon the other day, and I happened to notice an Arsenal baseball cap that's on its way to Knoxville that I had nothing to do with. So it makes me smile, you know. And the funny comment that was just made in the chat is something about if your kids are an Arsenal, you failed as a parent. I wouldn't say that, but if your kids are Arsenal, it will change your life for the better. So
yeah, my daughter mentioned, I've got 2-3 daughters, and my daughter sort of said, one of them sort of mentioned the word David Beckham once.
Did you say two or three daughters?
Well, I've got three daughters.
I was like, do you not know?
Well, I've got twins, and I always sort of like see them as one.
I should have let that go, but I see
them as one. And yeah, she mentioned David Beckham, but hey mate, one stare and that was the end of that. You know that, and so the whole of my household is mad on football. When I come home, football's on the telly before I get home, so that's cool.
Yeah, you've done well, and I got some angry texts from my son recently because I brought him over for the holidays, so we got to see the West Ham and Fulham defeats, and then when I came back without him because he went back to school, I got to see a 6-0, a 5-0, and a 6-0. And he was just, I mean, there was, I can't show you the language that he was using out of jealousy and frustration, but we'll have our chance. We'll have our chance in May. So because this show is literally called From Highbury to the Grove, we always want to try to ask our guests, and Archangel, I know you were being facetious. We always try to ask our guests kind of how you feel about the transition from, when you went to games at Highbury, both on the terraces probably, as well as, after it was an all-seater. And of course you are a regular at Emirates now. And, we know what's evolving at the Emirates right now, but just tell us a little bit about Highbury and what it meant to you and how you think we're stacking up to that now.
Yeah. I mean, when you were started going to Highbury, you just never imagined that we could ever move, and to me, that was just what you did. You went to the tube, you got off at Arsenal, you went left, home of football, walked to North Bank, and that was it. As I got older, started to go to various pubs, and yeah, it's just that's what you did. And but yeah, the period around 89 was a special period for me. That's when it really started to go. And I didn't go to the game, although I should have, and I had the chance to go. But my work would let me leave, and I was working for Lehman Brothers then, right? And and
I remember that.
Yeah, it was an important job, like, and I couldn't risk it. And so I had to stay, and my friends went. And they had the time of their lives. And but what we did do, we went up on the Saturday. It's Bank Holiday weekend. We went up on the Sunday. We went up on the Monday. And it was just an incredible time. That was the most incredible time at Highbury I've ever had, that whole weekend. But I'm one of these people, although I loved Highbury, I do remember that it was outdated. I do, and I had this feeling we had to move forward. And as a person, I am somebody that understands the past, understand how past experiences build you. But I am somebody that really looks to the horizon always. I look to the horizon when I'm doing my football analysis, looks to how we can always improve things. And if you are a natural, not a natural, suppose by design, I am a teacher. You know, I'm somebody that wants to teach, and for that you have to look forward, you have to project. You know, so when I do my podcast and I'm trying to add to people's experience of watching Arsenal in my own way. And so I tend not to look back too much. I tend to look forward a lot. So I really do appreciate the Emirates. I enjoy it. I like it. You know, I don't sit and think, I wish we were back at Highbury. I'm thinking, no, I like the Emirates. I want it to be better. You know, I want everyone to experience a better match day experience. And over the last 3-4 years, the match day experience is just incredible. It's like a major event. It's honestly incredible to watch that develop over the last few years. So I'm one of those people that really enjoy what we have today and seeing the continuous improvement to the match day experience.
And like Sophie astutely points out, when we win the league, the Emirates will take on a new meaning and legacy as well. It's just, you know, the Emirates Stadium can't help the fact that the first 18 years we've lived there, we haven't won any, you know, we haven't won a trophy, a league, and have gone through some fairly dark times. So, but there have still been some great moments, and they seem to be happening more and more often now. And
yeah,
I mean, the ability to be at that Porto game, which was, you know, 2.5 hours plus of absolute grief and stress, but with the most rewarding moment at the very end, was special. And by the way, I enjoyed seeing you before that game. That was a heck of a crew at that pub before the game. It was a really, yeah, really nice pregame.
Yeah, it was a very nervy game, wasn't it? I think we all felt that this team has got something, but in the end, you need to win football matches. So it matches your expectations. And we would have not matched the expectations we got at last 16. Then to achieve path, which is quarterfinals for me, was nice, because now we're here. We want a little bit more, didn't we? So,
yeah. So, like I said at the beginning, I knew we weren't going to get to everything. We haven't even talked about your podcasting career and how that all came to be and all that. And I want to make sure that we've got some excellent questions in the chat. So I'm going to switch over to questions, and then, we'll have more to talk about, you know, the next time that we do this, which I hope will be a thing. So this is the Zenith Coins questions segment, brought to you by Zenith Coins. Their newest coin, which I'm going to show you here, is a North Bank coin, which is very, of course, sentimental to me, since that's where I spent a lot of time and that's where I now spend a lot of time. But take a look at this beauty, and you can own one of these. You can't rent it, but you can own it. And in the chat below, just go to Zenith Coins, take a look at it. They've got multiple different coins, and you can get 10% off if you use code HSNB10. Thanks to Sophie and Kev and the Highbury Squad. So let's get to some questions.
It's good to hear that Kev is back on his feet, by the way.
So, yeah, I was going to mention that at the end, but oh, what good news.
Yeah, that's great stuff. Great stuff.
We've missed him, and very, very, very scary situation that's turned out well. So Matt Tomo asks, and we hope that you're, you know, that your high expectations have been met, Matt. What's the coolest experience you've had as a result of your brilliant work as a podcaster? I think I know the answer to this, but
I don't know, actually. Well, you tell me your answer after I give you my answer.
Or maybe this wasn't as a result of your work, but wasn't there an evening? No, this certainly wasn't. This was much earlier. Wasn't there an evening where basically you got dragged along with the entire team, the team to?
Yeah, that was 93. So that
right,
was just,
right, right. Yeah,
so that was just me taking the first team to the pub I used to frequent before games. And so, yeah, scary. Good moment for my street cred.
No big deal.
Good moment for my street cred, but scary moment, right? So the coolest moment literally happened probably about 4 months ago, actually. There'd been many, many good moments, but, you know, being involved with the stadium thing, you know, the wraparound stadium, I'm very proud of that. And I got to see the club from the inside, and it was a hugely educational thing being involved with that. But the coolest moment was for me, get off the tube at Finsbury Park, going down to the pub down the road, and a guy comes up to me, and a guy from Somalia, actually, just come up to me, and he just sort of said, "Hey, Clive, how are you? Just want to let you know that I love the podcast." And like, that happens quite a lot. Very lucky, right? Very lucky with the audience. People are so polite, so nice, want to come up and talk to you. And I goes, "Oh, mate, thanks, no problem. Well, yeah, how'd you find it?" He goes, "Oh, the way you talk is great." But I was just talking to him. And he says, "You know what, Clive, I really appreciate the work that you guys do with refugees." And I went, "Oh, that's really nice. You know, we do our once-a-year fundraiser, mate." And
amazing, amazing work. I can't say enough about what Elliot and the rest of you guys are doing with that, with the Arsenal Foundation. And I mean, it blows me away. As a guy who tries to raise money for charity on a regular basis, what you guys have been able to do is amazing. And it's just, but continue, please.
It comes down to the quality of your audience, right? And they're just amazing. We are the luckiest people when it comes to that. And so he goes, he just says to me, "Oh, Clive, I really appreciate the work you're doing with refugees. I've not seen anyone do anything like that before." And I went, "Oh, mate, it's just something we do." I explained a little bit. He goes, "Look, Clive, when I first heard your podcast, I just want to let you know that I'm a refugee. I've been over here for 2-3 years now. And when I heard that, I was just taken back." He said, "When I heard you guys speaking, I thought, you know what, I need to educate myself. So I went to college, and now I actually work in closely with the foundation." And I just thought to myself, gulp. I just went, gulp. And he said to me, "You know, you guys have really inspired me." And I thought, this started off as a little, "Hey, Clive, like the podcast conversation," and ended up in something that we do because we believe in it, something we do because we're committed to it. And it has helped inspire somebody, turn his life around, educate himself, and give to others. And that by far is the most coolest experience that we've had.
Amazing. Probably not the answer that Matt was expecting, but it's the answer that, if you know Clive, shouldn't surprise you. Next question from now, speaking of meeting people through Arsenal and through the podcast, Bob is the first person I met simply because of the podcast, where he contacted me and said, "Let's meet up at the pub." This was back in 2016, 2017. So I've got a soft spot for Bobby. If you could have any player from any time frame at Arsenal when you were younger, who would it be?
At Arsenal now, in our team?
I think that's the gist of it, yeah.
Yeah, we know the answer, if you know me. It's Patrick Vieira, right? So, he just represented everything that was good, that was edgy. You know, he just represented us. When you're going away up north and you got Patrick on the pitch, you know, that's it. You're okay, you know? And
imagine him playing next to Declan. I mean, he didn't play next to chumps when he was playing, but like, I mean, just putting the two of them.
It'd just be ridiculous. And in a strange way, sometimes when you look back at footballers, you think, you know what, if you played today, you wouldn't be able to do it, or the game has changed. I actually think the game has gone towards Patrick Vieira in many aspects. If you imagine him in sort of that left eight position for us now, and taking the ball, carrying the ball to the back line, 1-2s, getting it back, not having to do, he had Gilberto with him, but it was a 2, now it'll be a 3. His impact would be just absolutely huge. And so, yeah, if I could transport him into our team, I think we'd be fine, don't you?
I mean, do you think him now would be better than some of the other options? I'm not saying some of our other options that we have, you know, but like, I mean, he looks like he's in great shape, like he could still do it.
Yeah, obviously, Henri, obviously, to me, Henri's the best player we've ever had. And he could run a bit in this team as well. But Vieira just means a lot, you know, just means a lot. Just the way he approached the game. I like players that would play like you would if you could. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And his era, there was a lot more physicality and you had to really fight for the right to play. And referees were a little bit more lenient on some of the physical contact. And yeah, he just represented how I looked at the game back then. So yeah, absolutely. Easy one.
Fantastic. All right. From Giant Cal Gunner.
I met him recently.
Did you? Well, yeah, Dave is from, Dave has the, I mentioned this on the show last week, but he is the one who snapped the picture of the whiteboard in the dressing room.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that went a little bit viral. Yeah.
I'm glad you had the opportunity to meet Dave. He's a really, really good guy. Very ardent supporter of Gooners versus Cancer as well. So thank you, Dave. Outside of football and Arsenal, what's the next biggest hobby or interest? Very interesting question.
Sign of football and Arsenal, crikey. well, again, I
mean, you have a career that's not, I mean, which blows me away. I do 1 hour a week and I can't balance my time appropriately. That wouldn't be a hobby. Do you have time for anything else?
Yeah, I think, you know what? I walk a fair bit with my dogs and I do that. And I'd be honest with you, football is a big part of my life. I watch non-league. I watch, you know, I watch women's football now. And so, yeah, it's a big part of what I do. And sometimes, even if I go walking, you know what I'm doing? I'm thinking about football and how I can message something or understand something. So, yeah, that's a big part of what I do. Obviously, being a parent to four children, 2 girls at university, supporting them to make sure they come out into the world as the best possible versions of themselves. Those are things that I do, as well as work in my day job, which is I work for one of the big 4 banks in the UK and do a bit of stuff around data protection and cybersecurity, things like that. So, yeah, that's what I do.
Absolutely amazing. I don't know how people find the time. I just don't. But it is a skill and something that clearly allows you to be in a lot of different places at a lot of different times, theoretically. Anyway, Delta Sauce says, you spoke about the evolution of the team accurately last year, nailed it. What does the evolution like over this summer to come? So now it's not enough for him or her that you did a good job talking about the past. Now he or she wants you to predict the future.
I really like this question, because on the stage with Ian Wright, it's quite hard to get your thoughts together. And I got asked this question.
Wonderful show, by the way. Wonderful show.
And that was a cool moment. I couldn't speak for about 3 minutes. Right. So but I got asked a similar question. How do you see the team evolve? And I had this thing about us evolving off the ball. And I just managed to get it sort of right. And if you look at how the team has evolved this year, we have evolved a lot more off the ball. We've evolved a lot more physically. So the pictures I had for this team have come into fruition. And I've been thinking about the very question Delta Source asked me, how do I see this team developing? And I actually think there's the left-hand side of our defence has some development room for a different profile of player there. I think we could do with a wing-back style player. So when I saw the link to that Miguel Gutierrez, the Real Madrid left-back that's playing for Girona right now, I thought, yeah, man, that's what I'm thinking about. Because what that does to the left side of our team, what it does to our left-side attackers like Martinelli and Trossard, it changes things. So I think there's room at the full-back area to develop. I think there's room for a project centre forward. And that's depending on Gabriel Jesus' fitness. I don't think we're going to go big on a centre forward. I'm talking.
What do you mean? Project centre forward is an interesting way of putting it, because everyone's talking about buying completed articles. But
yeah, I don't think we're going to. If Gabriel Jesus has got something interesting going on with his knee and maybe needs to move, then we go big. If Gabriel Jesus is here, we don't need to go big. And so I'm looking more at the wide forward stroke and the Sesko level of centre forward. Somebody that has something unique about them physically, but then you can develop them into the Premier League intensity. I think that's the way I see it's going. There's obviously room for a smaller space centre mid to come in to allow Declan to develop into the six if he wants to. But that centre mid needs to be a 6-8 rather than a 8-6 rather than a 6-8. Because I think Declan will end up being the six. So he's somebody that can be an eight, but also can be a six when Declan does have some days need to put his flip-flops on and rest. You know, so that's how I see it going forward.
Beautiful. Thank you, Delta Sauce, for the question. This question from our very own Sophie. For the first time, I'm so excited about facing Manchester City away. We've craved these moments. I have no fear. If we win this game, how much does the narrative change for the Arsenal, for the Arsenal?
It's quite interesting, actually, because going on the overlap, you get to speak to other fans. And the first time I went, it was like, Arsenal, blah, blah, blah. This time, it's like, they take this more seriously, you know, and we look like a serious football team now. We have done all season. Even when the attack wasn't working, we looked more our intent to win the ball back and have territorial domination was obvious to me from day one. Day one. So that was the lessons learned from last season. So our defensive structures and our offensive distances look so crisp. Our front to back, how brave we are, how front-footed we are. It feels like we're a grown-up team that's growing up. I don't feel when we go to Man City, I don't fear the 4-1. The only thing, and that would disappoint me if that happened, it really would disappoint me. It would make me think, what have I been looking at then? This is not true. You know, this is not real. If we win, great. If we don't win and lose in a fair way, I even find that exciting. Because you know what, Mike? By Monday, we will know what's missing in this team if we don't beat Man City. We will know what's missing. We all feel we are on the path to something special. But to get there, we need to know that we've gone through all the experiences we need to go through to allow us to win multiple big trophies in a row. Man City blew a Champions League final by not getting it right on the day. So who's to say that we don't need to go through these experiences to get to that level of winning? So whatever happens on Sunday, we are going to find out what we have. We're going to find out what's missing. And what's missing, we may not know. So last year, we rocked up to Man City. They went long 30 times. We didn't expect it. They go long this time. We want it. We've encouraged it. And we can deal with it. You know, so I'm so looking forward because I think we have all the play styles to manage them. Doesn't mean we're going to beat them. But I don't think they can surprise us with a style of play or a tactic that we haven't seen before or we can't cope with. That's what excites me about this game. It's not a guaranteed 3 points. No. But I'm much happier. We have a much more rounded game to go to Etihad with.
And I would agree with you until I saw that Anthony Taylor was picked as the ref. But that's a different conversation for a different day. But no, I that's how I felt about the Liverpool away this year. You know, going up there and getting a point to me felt like a good point, especially considering the middle 70 minutes of that game were really, we were kind of on our back feet because it was an evolution. It was, you know, we would have gone up there in every other year and dropped every point and probably not even in a close game. And so, you know, it, again, it's an evolution. Some people don't want to wait long enough. They want everything now. That's their prerogative, but yeah, the one thing we're not going to be up there is a team that from the very first minute looks like they're afraid. Cause we've seen that.
Yeah.
We've been there, we've done that, and that's the culture shift that we've had. One or two at most more questions. One from Patrick Carlson. I love this best Arsenal related biography that you've read. There are a lot of them out there.
I read a few from not say biographies, but I read a few books from Dave Seeger. You know Dave?
Oh, I know Dave very well. I love his books.
So yeah, so I support Dave's books really. The other books I sort of read, and I'm not a big reader of books per se, Mike. Yeah. So, but if I do read something, it will be around coaching philosophies. You know, it will be around Johan Cruyff books. You know, I'm interested in that part of football history. And I think studying coaches, I think is interesting because coaches, let's say, copy each other, but they learn from each other. So by learning about philosophies of coaches like Cruyff and Rinus Michels, for example, you get to see and almost project forward to what's happening today, and then how coaches that we have in Arteta can evolve going forward. So yeah, that's the sort of things that interest me. Arsenal books, I buy them, but I put them on my shelf behind me. I don't always read them. But I like to have them, if you see what I mean. So,
We've got the Highbury Library at our flat where we've got about 20 or 25 books. And you know, part of it is so that we can display the books. You know, if I'm lucky enough to have somebody like when Amy came over, her books were up there. I can't claim to have read them all, but it just seems, and I don't know if this is the case with other teams or if it's just an Arsenal thing, but it just seems that a lot of our ex-players, coaches, physios, whatever the case may be, seem to really have that literary kick, and of course the fans, people like Dave Seeger who have experienced this club in so many different ways, over many years, who have the light-sided books that with Jacob, with Poorly Drawn Arsenal that he's done, the books like Arsenal for Everyone, and about comedians who are Arsenal fans. I mean, it's just a wide variety, and I'm seeing signs of a new one that may be coming out in the future.
Interesting.
I think he's
another thing I do because I didn't answer the question earlier probably, but I do like cycling, you know, and so cycling books interest me. Cycling history interests me, and also I like my rugby, right? And again, it's looking at different sports allows you to see your own sport in a different light. I do think sometimes we get into an Arsenal tunnel. Don't stay in the tunnel too long on the Arsenal first team. Get yourself out. Get yourself out to a non-league game or a youth game or a game we can get close to. Connect to a game in different ways. And when you come back to Arsenal, you can see it. You know, you can see it clearly. Go and get to a game where you can hear people shouting, hear people talking. That's the key way for me to connect to the game. If I do my talking, I don't like to talk unless I've been to see football matches and felt the game. I think it's very important to emotionally connect to a game in a different way and not be swept up with just the stuff we see online. So whatever sporting event you can get to, remind yourself of the competitive environment and how challenging it is, and then it gives you some sort of Arsenal perspective.
Excellent words. So, you know, so many good questions, not enough time to get to all of them. One word to the wise in future episodes would be, if you want your question to be read, you've got a better chance of doing it if you ask it earlier in the show. Because once we get into the questions, a little backstage stuff, I end up kind of turning off the live chat to go to the questions, and I won't see the ones that are being asked as we're already doing the segment. So thank you to everybody for asking those. Now, Soph, I think, whispered through the chat to me that the best question tonight would win a Zenith coin, and he got lucky because I don't know if it was the best question, but it was certainly the best answer. So the very first one from Matt Tomo is my pick for the winner tonight of the best question, which was, you know, what is the best experience that you've had as a result of your podcasting? And if for some reason you've just tuned in and you are the 700th person in the chat that just tuned in, rewind a little bit and listen to Clive's greatest answer. So we're at the hour mark, so we're going to wrap things up. Before we do, I just want to thank you for something kind of personal to me. Last October, surrounding the Sheffield United game, the home game, I was, you know, in a bit of a rut from podcasting. A lot was going on in my life. No big deal. I happened to be over for the game, and I think it was a weekend that Elliot and Andrew and a bunch of folks were also there. And we had a nice post-game gathering. I won't say where. It'll remain nameless, but you might be surprised that I remember this, considering that it was late in the evening after a game and I had had a couple of beverages. But you had some very, very, very kind words for me. And this is another, I mean, I think you can see why I might not have remembered it, but some very, very
my favorite drink there, little bottle absolutely. Of Duval.
Very kind words, encouragement. I had told you about my idea for this podcast series, and while it came together a lot, kind of over a much longer period of time than I expected, your encouragement and your words were a big reason I kept after it. And, you know, it's a main reason why I wanted to have you on very early on in the show, because this podcast is built around the community of Arsenal, the positive vibes that people like you, like others, like Sophie and Super Kev, who we're very, very excited to have back on the Highbury squad on Monday, put out into the world in, you know, in a day and an age where far too often it's the opposite of that. So thank you from the bottom of my heart for not only appearing on the podcast, for your friendship and for your counsel and your encouragement. It really meant a lot to me.
You didn't have to thank me, mate. I would that's just you didn't have to thank me, but I do appreciate it. One last thing I would like to say.
You can replace that as the best moment you've had with your podcast.
Very lucky to have some of the exposure that I've had recently and the platform that I have and you know, the quiet respect that people hold me by. But I have to say, there are so many people that I've met, including Sophie and yourself. The only thing I try to do is just to be authentic. This is it. This is all you've got, mate. There's nothing new. There's nothing more coming. This is it. I just feel very, very lucky that people are prepared to listen. And I just want to thank every one of them, because it's really important. It's just football. It's all it is. And we're all here to enjoy this experience together. It's nothing. If we win what we want to win, I cannot wait to hug every single person in the street. I cannot wait. And if you ever see me out there, you want to come up, do not hesitate. Just come up. It doesn't bother me in the slightest. Honestly, it just doesn't. In fact, it makes my day. So I just want to say that. And some people who do this stuff that we do, they get above themselves. Nah, mate, that's not what it's about. It's about enjoying it with other Arsenal people. So that's what I'm going to continue to do.
Well, that's fantastic. And Sophie says it best. We are lucky to have you. So thank you to everybody that joined us today. We were peaking a little over 700 in the live chat, which is fantastic. We're now on our regularly scheduled day of Thursday. We kicked off on a Monday a couple weeks ago due to scheduling and an opportunity. Our goal time for the pod is going to be 8 p.m. UK, but we may do it a little bit earlier in some cases, when it's called for. So stay tuned to the Highbury Squad and at the Gooners Pod for updates on shows. Next week, April 4th, we are currently scheduled for 8 p.m. We'll be welcoming a man who I've had the pleasure of conversing with both on and off air multiple occasions, but we're bringing him to kind of a new, larger audience than I have been able to bring him to in the past. Not than he's used to being in front of. He scored some of the most impactful goals in Arsenal Football Club's history, including one that was discussed, that was in a game that we discussed earlier in the podcast. He scored 115 more Arsenal goals and has two more golden boots than Clive and I combined.
I know who that is.
He's moved from a fantastic career in football into a great career as a writer for newspapers, of an autobiography, which was fantastic, by the way, and an ongoing punditry career on Sky Sports, where you can hear him every week. Who am I talking about? I think it's pretty obvious, but tune in next week to hear from the man himself. I'm sorry to do this, but I've got a little smudge on my camera here. So please tune in next week. This has been episode 2 of From Highbury to the Grove. Thank you, Clive, for appearing. Any final last words? Anything you want to draw our attention to? You mentioned a book earlier.
Nothing really, mate. People know where to find me, and I'm doing the overlap thing now. I'll see how I go with that. You know, let's see how I go. I just want to represent people better. So that's what I'm trying to do. Obviously, the fundraiser starts in a little while, but you'll get people will see that. And really, it's all about the football. It's all about what's coming up and the fun we could have if we all stick together. So that's where my head is, mate. That's where my head is.
Well, looking forward to seeing you hopefully late April, early May, and get another one of those epic hugs that we were talking about. So thanks, mate. Appreciate it. Thanks to everybody in the chat. And we have taken you tonight from Highbury to the Grove.